I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
J Cross, do you want to learn about MIDI?
Oh man, I'm so dumb.
I don't know anything about MIDI. I know. Well, good for you that this week on the Patreon exclusive episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast, we talked almost to an unbelievably nerdy degree about MIDI and what it can do for your setup, how, what pedals use it, what you can do, the history of MIDI. We did a proper deep dive.
We did, and even I, a Luddite, now I'm kind of thinking, maybe I should get MIDI.
Did you know that you could get MIDI on just a regular jack plug?
That honestly blew my mind. I had my mind blown 3 or 4 times during that episode, and I'm still not quite recovered.
There was a lot to learn. History of MIDI, how it all works, a real step-by-step guide by Matt Knight himself, all over on this week's Patreon episode. Patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support this podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode early and ad-free. $5 a month gets you access to an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every week, as well as the mini-series like Branton's Ranton and all the interviews that we do with people from all around the guitar world. Do check it out, patreon.com/guitar nerds. You also get access to all the previous stuff on there. We've racked up about 80 or 90 hours worth of stuff now, so plenty to listen to. patreon.com/guitar nerds. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Hello there.
And Jay Cross.
That's me.
That was a nice little thing there, Matty.
Yeah, my cat walked in at the same time, so...
Oh, he was saying hello to the cat, not to
us. Right, okay, so we don't get the...
Oh, yeah, sorry. What am I doing?
If it had just been us, it would have just been the normal, what's up? But no, the cat... Cat brings it up to another level. Talking about another level, it's another week, another Guitar Nerds podcast. No Joe Branton this week because we're recording on a Tuesday. Got to apologise to everyone who listens that the podcast is going up a day later than normal. It's because me and Jay had to go and win a Twin Peaks pub quiz.
We are busy stuff to do.
Busy stuff. So, you know, there was normal life stuff that got in the way of getting the podcast.
Don't happen often, does it?
And we did win the quiz.
There was 14
teams.
That's
the real quiz.
That is the real quiz.
Whether you win the quiz. Over a pub. What have you done?
It was good. 14 teams and we finished top. So
we did. It was tense. There was only 2 points between first and third.
We know
what was the hardest question?
The hardest question was, what was the name of... what was the pseudonym that Norma Jennings' mother uses when she's the food critic?
That's a bit of a spoiler.
Wow, but I suppose I'd never get that.
26 years old.
Can you guess, Matty?
No.
Good.
No, I need to rewatch it, really.
It was M.T. Wentz. And I got that at the last minute and then we won. So it was all good. All good. Wow, anyway. So, so that's why the podcast has gone up late, and also why Branton's not here, because he can never podcast on Tuesdays, because he's doing band stuff, I guess.
I think so, yeah.
He has two band
practices.
I know, he has two band practices a week.
It's really full on.
That's like...
I mean, they start the song on a Tuesday, and then they finish it on a Friday.
Yeah, that's why he needs to have the two. In fact, he doesn't work on Wednesdays. He just starts on Tuesday and goes all the way through Wednesday, finishes up on Wednesday night. God, what a load of old nonsense. Anyway, so yeah, just the three of us tonight. Loads and loads of news, but I wanted to talk first about what's been happening this week. Matt Knight, you've been on a whistle stop tour of UK guitar shops.
I have indeed.
With the Roland and Boss team, is that right?
Yes, Mr. Yoshi Ikigami and his head of amplifiers and my equivalent in marketing Japan for Boss did 10 guitar shops in the UK.
To some people, that sounds like a dream. To others who have worked in guitar shops, a nightmare.
It was super interesting. I mean, we did, let's think here. So we did PMT, Portsmouth, Guitar Village, Anderton's, Stompbox, which is in North London, which is a cool store, Peach Guitars, PMT Cambridge, Coda, GAC, and Guitar Camden.
That's a lot of guitar stores. What was the coolest thing that you saw? I noticed you put some nice stuff up on Instagram.
Yes, so I went down to there was two things. I went to Coda Music for the first time, which is in Stevenage. They are Europe's biggest Fender custom shop dealer.
Right.
And they had a lot of custom shop. It's a tiny store. I mean, it is tiny. You have to walk through this narrow entranceway, which has also got the counter on it, which is like full of pedals. Loads of custom shop stuff. In fact, I don't think they had anything like remotely cheap in there. Then like a whole thing of like Fender custom shops, and you go upstairs, loads more PRS, loads of like Gibson Memphis, and then loads of like made, they had a made to measure Les Paul, I suppose it was a custom, it was a black aged Les Paul with a mini humbucker in the bridge, a P90 in the neck, and a Bigsby.
Of course.
Cool. It's like, that's the weirdest guitar.
Just like, on like Gibson, a Les Paul standard.
On just, oh, it looked like a Les Paul custom, but it didn't have like the custom inlays. So I'm guessing it was supposed to be like a 70-something Les Paul.
Weird.
That was weird. But they had loads of Sparkle Fender custom shops, which was quite cool. But yeah, that was a super neat store. And then they also have an acoustic shop, which has like one of the biggest displays of Loudon acoustics. They had like a Loudon acoustic. It was like £9,000.
Sheesh.
Crikey.
I was like, wow, that's a lot of money for it. And I was saying to the guy, I was like, I can never really buy another acoustic because I've had my acoustic so long and I just love the way it sounds. I just don't feel as passionately about an acoustic guitar as I do electric guitars. Yeah. I wouldn't even really know where to start as much on an acoustic guitar.
I think that's kind of the same for all of us and probably most people listening to this, is like you spend so much money on the electric guitars, pedals, amps, and then acoustics. Yeah. I reckon most people listening to this who are more kind of pedal and electric guitar heavy have probably got £500 acoustic guitars, you know, like yeah. Nothing but then, crazy.
But then, you know, that market is propped up by, you know, I guess, do you reckon acoustic guitars are, there's more people that own acoustic guitars than electric guitars?
Yeah, I reckon so.
You know, it's the sort of thing that a lot of people would just be like, oh yeah, I've got, you know, oh, I went and bought £100 acoustic guitar because I wanted to learn and then never learned.
Totally. Like, I bought one for my brother-in-law for a couple of years ago for his birthday.
Yeah.
And he just got like a Fender CD100 acoustic, you know, like the real basic one. And like, he uses it a bit, but it just sits in the corner of their living room looking quite nice.
Yeah.
And I would imagine that story is replicated across a lot of people in the country.
Yeah. We went to Guitar Village, which is another store that amazingly I've never been to, but they're a huge, I mean, they've been a dealer for a long time. And Mark, you probably remember them for the Boscon Mad Sale they used to hold.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Every year they did a Boscon Mad Sale where they do like custom shops at like 50% off.
Yeah.
Clear stock.
Yeah, it was a proper stock clearance, end of the year, we need to shift some of this stuff. And they would do, like, occasionally you'd get, like, a pedal for a quid and stuff like that.
It was bonkers. But that was a cool store because they have loads of amazing vintage stuff. They had, like, a 52 P-Bass in there.
Oh, nice.
They had, like, a 55 Les Paul. They had a Martin acoustic from 1890.
Ooh, crikey, how much was that up for?
$5,000.
That kind of doesn't seem that sound, expensive.
Yeah.
But it looked amazing because it's this like tiny parlor classical. It had all the documentation relating right back to where it was built and who owned it originally.
That's a cool thing to own, isn't it?
Yeah.
I guess at that point it would have been custom made for whoever was buying it.
But no, yeah, I think at that point they were.
There was production.
Because I obviously, you know, I've said this in the past. I've been to the Martin factory, and they do a tour, and you can go and they've got like a little museum there, and I'm pretty sure that at that point there was like production runs being made.
Okay.
They were being made like for stores, but you know,
yeah,
there was a point where I can't remember. It was so interesting. I want to go back and check it all out again. But
take a camera next time, film some stuff.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, I mean, this was like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, yeah. I guess. So, but yeah, it's really good. If anybody listening is in the northeast or like, you know, northern Pennsylvania. Or in that area, it's not actually that far. It's like, I reckon, a 2-hour drive from New York.
Okay.
It's really, really worth a visit. It's super interesting. They run tours all day, and some of the guitars that they've got there are absolutely nuts.
That one that they smashed up in that film.
I was talking to someone about going to the Martin, because I only got like a handful of stories because I'm not that interested.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, people who listen to this podcast know that.
Well, of course, yeah. We're probably on. Completely, yeah. You know, it's just a rerun.
Yeah, probably heard this 3 or 4 times.
But I was talking to someone at work this week about going to the factory, and they said, like, oh, is that guitar that they smashed up there? And I went, oh, I don't know. And they went, oh, it's a shame.
Yeah. I mean, probably isn't there now. They'd probably hide that away.
I don't know. Maybe it is. I mean, it made major headline news.
Well, but also the headline was, we're never going to lend a guitar out ever again. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it isn't there.
Yeah.
So that, where was that, Matty? Was that in Guitar Village?
That's in Farnham. Yeah. So that was quite a cool store, and it's like in a really old house, over like a couple of floors. So it's like all the rooms kind of like intertwined stuff. It's really nice.
Funnily enough, with Guitar Village, I had a text from a friend of mine this week who wanted to get a new guitar, and he pointed out a Tele on the Guitar Village website. He was like, oh yeah, like I really like the idea of this. Like, what do you think? I really want something that's super versatile, that would do like, you know, like cool surfy sounds, but also like I can like really dig into. I was like, mate. Like, he also said he wanted something really fun to play. And I was like, mate, short scale, Duosonic HS, single coil in the neck,
yeah,
humbucker in the bridge. Like, 3 hours later, he sent me a picture of the Duosonic in Sonic Blue HS that he just bought. And, nice. Like, fit the bill perfectly. But yeah, I was saying to him, actually, I'd never been to that shop, and he said it was amazing.
Yeah, it was. And they had one brand there that I've only seen once before, and it's definitely worth, I think, maybe talking about it on the podcast at some point. Maybach?
I've never even heard of them. Oh, yeah, no, like, I have heard of them.
They've got, and I recommend everyone go and check it out on Guitar Village, they do a 59, like Les Paul copy with P90s in Pelham Blue. Yes. $16.99. It looks amazing.
I seem to imagine they got a bit of a weird headstock, though.
Yeah, that's the only slightly off-putting thing is the headstocks are just a bit, I don't know. I don't know really how to describe it. Not fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
but relict as well, or like lacquer checked, which was quite cool.
And you popped into the old homestead of GAC.
I did. Before that we did Peach Guitar's new store in Colchester, which I think now is potentially the biggest store, they think maybe the biggest store in Europe.
Wow.
Guitar dedicated store. They do nothing but guitars. 11 rooms.
Wow. Yeah, I saw some pictures. They've done it out like a sort of Western saloon, haven't they?
Yeah, the main room's done out like a Western saloon. It's over... It's an old warehouse, like an industrial... It's on an industrial state warehouse that they've... built an extra level on, done all the floors out, like proper wooden decks, done a huge like upper level, built a stage, and yeah, they've got 2,500 guitars there.
Ooh, that's a lot of guitars.
Including just a dedicated Gibson custom shop room, which was super nice. A dedicated like Fender custom shop room, one just for like PRS. They've got a dedicated like pedal room. They've got a boutique amp floor. Yeah, and then on the stage is John, who runs the store's collection of vintage Fender amps, which includes two ex-Gary Moore Super Reverb and Deluxe Reverb. He's got a 52 Les Paul there, a 47 ES, I think it's 135 or something like that.
Crikey.
He's got my old telly, 72 telly. He's got 74 Les Paul. And then he was like, oh, this is the newest thing that I've bought. And they pulled out an original, all original 1962 Strat.
Wow. Yeah, this is the thing that you put on Instagram that I wanted to talk about. So this is something what that they just got in, right? And what, sunburst, rosewood?
Sunburst, laminate rosewood board, which would, yeah, mean it was after August 61. So yeah, laminate rosewood board, quite chunky neck, pretty well worn, but not ridiculously well worn. Sunburst. And I mean, it's funny, you just pick it up and you just look at it and you go, people kind of miss the point in relics, because I don't think relic guitars are like, they're not really now like originals.
I know what you mean.
And people are like, oh, you know, I'd never pay for that. And it's like, you're actually sort of paying, well, you are, you're paying for a finish. You're not paying for like almost like a replica. Like, I think if you bought a Collector's Choice Gibson, you are basically buying a replica. But like a relic Fender, it's like, it's just nothing like how this 62 was.
No. The wearing on a real one is much more subtle, yeah. I guess. That's why, and I always, again, we've talked about this so much, but I always like Closet Classic, yeah, because of that. That seems, agreed, so much more realistic than the relic stuff. So
yeah. And it had one original owner from new.
Wow.
He'd paid £160 for it, and his original receipt was in the case, and it came with the original extra case that he bought with it, but it wasn't a Fender, it was a Selmer case.
Wow.
So yeah, it was, that was pretty amazing, really.
Did you get a chance to plug it in?
I did not. No, didn't have enough time, but I did get to strum a few chords on it and stuff, which was super,
how was that neck? Nice.
Chunky.
Yeah.
Chunky, actually. I thought it was going to be slimmer, but it felt quite thick. Not as thick as like some of the 50s stuff. Like, remember we had a Custom Shop 54 in, which was like a replica one they did, and that had like a massive baseball bat neck on it. But yeah, this one was just like thick, but not overly like 50s thick, I suppose, but not stupidly slim. Like, you get some of those 60s slim ones and they just like just feel a bit weedy.
Yeah,
no, it felt like an amazing guitar. And the guy, I think the guy just went, do you know what, I just want to trade it in, you know, I've had it for a long time, I think it should go to someone else who is going to get more use out of it now than I am. And I think he just traded it in for a couple of modern bits and some money.
It's been a whole week of vintage guitars, because we were in GAC at the weekend.
Yeah.
Jan and I popped down there before we went off and went into town. And that 74
yeah,
telly. They've got a 74 telly, like natural finish at the moment.
Oh, nice.
And it just like felt really, really good. It was, so we were talking about it with one of the guys in there, and like, apparently 75, 76 is when they start getting really heavy. 74 was still good, because I used to have the 78 telly that we've talked about a bit, and that was a beast.
Yeah.
This 74 was much lighter. I think part of it was that it was natural finish. So there was, on the 78, it had like a really thick undercoat, of like white undercoat and then a black like top coat on it, whereas, right, this obviously was just lacquered.
Yeah.
But I mean, the other thing is, it still suffered from the same problem as the 78 in that the frets were completely worn down.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They were kind of like wide flat, I think, when they first came out. So they're like quite, yeah, they're wide, but I don't think they were ever particularly high.
I mean, it felt to me very similar to your 72, Matty, which was, yeah, like, it's one of those things where you look at it I saw it and I was like, wow, that looks amazing. I, yeah, bet it plays really badly, but I've got to play it. And I picked it up and it played really badly.
Well,
it didn't play badly.
I thought,
but
it was
like,
okay.
I just, like, 725 radius, I just can't get into it.
Yeah.
You know, there's that, and there's, like, when you try other guitars, those weird 70s guitars, man, I don't know. It played exactly how I expected it to play, which is, like, exactly how Matt's played. And I remember feeling exactly the same when I played Matt's, which was just like, oh.
I liked it. I thought it was
good.
Did you?
Oh, well, there we go.
But then I really liked that 78 that I had, despite the kind of pancaked frets. That was always a cool guitar. But yeah, a couple of cool other bits. Well, you know, while I've actually been into a guitar shop this weekend, I should probably talk about the things that we saw.
Yeah.
Custom Shop 50. no, 60s P-Bass Relic Green Sparkle.
Yeah, like, oh, I saw
Aqua
that.
Sparkle.
Yeah.
What a finish. Like, I'm kind of toying with the idea of getting a new guitar, and we'll talk about that in a minute. I don't think I want to get a custom shop thing, but if I do, that is the finish.
Why don't you just do it?
Because, okay, well, let's get into this. So, this week, as we've talked about a fair bit, like, I've just moved house and I finally got around to setting up the guitar workstation, yeah, like a little office area, but I'm going to use it to play guitar at as well and, like, record stuff. I want to do some live streaming for the Facebook group and record stuff for YouTube and things like that. And so I've got the Les Paul Junior, which is the thing I generally use on everything. But those P90s are quite a specific sound, and I feel like, you know, if I was ever going to do a pedal demo or demo something on my board or whatever, the Junior's not really the best guitar to show that off. So I've got that. I've got the Pink Sparkle Strat, which at the moment is in the middle of undergoing a transformation for mod mode. First video of mod mode has gone up on the YouTube channel. Do go and check it out. But so shortly, pickups are going to be ripped out of that. Humbuckers are going to go in. I've picked up a five-way switch, so I will have a proper single-coil Fender guitar. But I really want a Tele of some description. Now, you're going to think this is weird.
Okay.
I think I want to spend £600 to £700.
Okay.
I don't think I want to get a Baja Tele.
Okay.
I think what I might get is... So I want to support a different company. I always supported Fender. I've got the P-Bass. Love Fender, obviously. But there's a lot of up-and-coming companies, so I really like what they're doing. And I want to buy something a little bit different than just a Tele.
Okay.
I could just get a Baja Tele. But, or, I've been looking at the Reverend Buckshot, which is a mahogany-bodied bolt-on neck guitar, maple board, with Tele pickup in the bridge, and what they call the Revtron or something, Revtron, which is a Gretsch-style pickup in the neck.
Okay.
And they do some really cool colours. They do like a... like a butterscotch. They also do like a Daphne blue. The black with the tortoiseshell guard is really nice. They sound absolutely incredible. Tunematic bridge on there. So again, just a little bit different, like real kind of hybrid guitar. So I spent a lot of time looking at demo videos of the Buckshot, and I kind of think that's what I want to go for.
My only issue with them, because I think our friend Tony's got one of these.
He's not got one of those.
Is he not them?
He's got... So they do a few different guitars on that body shape. I think he's got the... Oh, something else. The Agent 5 or something it's called. Or Agent something or other.
The body is just...
No, I like the body.
It's weird,
isn't it? I was kind of with you, but then I've really warmed to it. I've watched a lot of videos. What do you reckon, Matty?
Yeah, I think they're great. Just buy one.
just buy one. You know, the thing that's really swayed me is obviously we talked a lot about the Billy Corgan over the Gear of the Year period. We did the demo before Christmas. Talked
it's
about
just
it
the neck.
As a, yeah, the necks are so good. And yeah, this is going to have the same profile. It's going to have the same build quality, same setup. I was just kind of blown away by that Billy Corgan. I think in terms of guitars under a grand... I don't think I've played anything better, you know. And what else am I looking at? You know, like Baja Tellies, yeah, they're really good, and we've always gone on about them. I just don't think I want a Baja Telly.
Yeah,
I think I want something a bit different, mainly because I'm not a huge fan of Telly neck pickups.
I'm sort of on the other side in that I really need to get a new pickup for my offset. Because the neck pickup sounds great, and the bridge pickup...
I think you're mistaken. You should go back and watch some of the videos that we recorded with the offset Tele. It sounds great.
Like, I didn't... What, the bridge?
Yeah.
Maybe this is me, you know, and I'm sure that... Where are we? What, we're 4 years down the line from when we started podcasting together, roughly?
Yeah, 4 years.
I reckon that 2013 me... If I could hear myself now, would be screaming blue murder at me. But I think it's too trebly.
What?
I know.
There's no such thing.
I know. And I think that may have something to do with the fact that, you know, the treble is now going in my ears.
Yeah.
From, you know...
But then you should need it to be more trebly.
Maybe, but maybe the frequencies that do get through are just like, ooh.
Painful.
Ooh.
Painful. So... what my options are basically, I really like the look of the Reverend. I was looking at some used stuff on a forum today, and I saw early 90s Japanese telly, shell pink.
Oof.
500 yes. quid.
Oof.
Yes.
It had already gone. Oh. Otherwise, I probably would have gone for it. But the thing is, now I know that's out there, I'm like, oh, maybe another one of those will come up. Maybe I should wait. But, or, I've we've been in touch with the people at Reverend. I might just see if I can get a deal or
see,
maybe
whilst you were talking, and don't get me wrong, everybody needs a telly in their life.
Yep. Everybody needs a bosom for a pillow.
Well, there's also that. And I know that you've got your Squire. I know that that's on its way. But do you remember maybe about 18 months ago, you were like, I think I maybe want a Strat.
Yeah.
I think for what you want it for, you know, doing videos, like getting something that sounds good, maybe you should just get a Strat.
Well, I've got the Strat.
I suppose.
I've got the Strat. And the subtitle of Mod Mode episode one is Building the Ultimate Strat.
Well, okay, so I guess if you then go and buy like an American Pro or something, it's going to...
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not even that, because that guitar ultimately is never going to be as good as something like an American Pro, because... Yeah. You know, it's still the Squire body, which we're keeping because of the pink sparkle.
Yeah.
In fact, we had some comments come up on the video saying, why don't you just buy a Warmoth body? And I looked at what a pink sparkle Warmoth body would cost.
Oh, it's so expensive.
That'd be 500-600 quid.
On and how much is that without, before you paid like the tax and then had it shipped over here?
How much did you pay for that, Squire?
£152.
and actually, some stores have actually got those Squires on blowout deals.
Why would you do that? Why are the people not buying them?
I don't know.
So, yeah, so that's the plan for the Strat. And I've got those Fletcher pickups, which got sent to us about a year ago, and I've never done anything with them, with the whole idea they're going to go in this thing, and we're going to do the five-way switch and have a super, versatile guitar. But I kind of just want something I can plug in and instantly have like a telly sound.
Yeah.
And that Buckshot sounds great. It's mahogany body, so that's a little different from the usual. But they sound fantastic. So
I'll tell you what, Sterling James Valentine.
Yeah, I mean, that's always... But then it's going back to P90s again. Oh, no, they're just a single coil, aren't they?
It's a single coil in the fridge and a humbucker in the neck.
Yeah, I don't know. Don't know. So lots of choices. More news on that one next week, I reckon. Going to do a bit of digging.
One last thing, like, talking of modding and parts that I saw this week. And I'm like, I kind of want one, but it'd have to go on the SG. Duesenberg makes something called the Les Trem.
Okay.
Which is the Duesenberg Trem system that retrofits onto a Les Paul by replacing the bridge and the stop tail with just their parts.
Oh, okay. So... When you say
so you take off the tail, you take off the saddles,
yeah.
Right. So imagine a Les Paul or a Gibson SG. You take off the saddle part, unscrew it, so you've got two post like holes. You take off the stop tail, and then the two studs, and then you basically drop in this Duesenberg system, which gives you new saddles, and then a stop tail system that doubles up as a trem. So you get a Duesenberg trem arm. And the saddle as well.
Does it go down as far as the strap lock? Does it like go to like a maestro style?
Is it long? And is the trem unit long, or does it just sit roughly in the same place as the?
No, it just
replaces those four holes.
Yeah, it just it doesn't. You don't have to drill anything.
No, you literally
drop them in. But it just looks like a normal Gibson hardtail system, apart from the stop tail section is slightly larger and it's got a trem arm coming out.
Weird. That sounds well worth investigating.
I was like, should I just try one? They're not much money. They're like 60 quid.
Do you want a trem on your SG that you tune down to drop B flat?
Actually, no, I've restrung it with 11s. It's in standard now.
Yeah, good lad. Come back to the light side.
But I was just like, it might just be quite a cool thing to get and do a video on.
Yeah.
Because it's like, there's no like modding involved, basically. You just pop this on instead of the stop tail and there you go.
Do it, Matty. Sounds like something I'd be willing to watch, 100%. Should we, talking of new things, should we dive into the...
No. No, I need to go closer.
Yeah, and lower.
News.
I can't do it.
Just, he's got so much more. He's got so much more girth.
He does. Than you. He does. I just. I'm not feeling.
It's definitely more girthy.
I'm also not feeling 100% right now.
I can tell by the coughing into the microphone.
Sorry.
News.
That wasn't bad. That was not bad.
I've never pretended that I'm a that I'm Joe Branton.
No, thank God.
Well,
there can only be one.
That, I tell you what, listeners, if you're not, I know we bang on about this every week, but if you're not on the Facebook group, today, what? I think, was the single weirdest thing I've ever seen on there, where someone put up a picture that they found, that, like a still.
It's a screenshot of something they were watching.
A screenshot from a Norwegian crime drama with a creepy geezer hiding behind a car or something.
He's like getting into the car.
And he looks exactly like Joe Branton.
Yeah,
like
100%.
Because they posted it up and they're like, oh look, he's moonlighting again. And I, like,
it just looked like him.
I had to stare at it for like a full minute being like, that is him, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, do check it out. facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds.
Anyway, sorry, news.
Indeed, first bit of news. Dr. Z Amplification have announced the EMS. Matty, you're a big Dr. Z fan. What's going on?
I am. Yeah, so the next in the range of Dr. Z amps, and a slightly, I suppose, in a way, different look for them. They are definitely nodding their head to Marshall, Black Tolex, gold piping. And actually, that is effectively what it's based on. Two EL34 50 watt with tube or solid state rectifier valve. And this, but they're basically going for that kind of classic 70s Marshall sound. Non-master volume. Master volume, because it's got a gain control. Sorry, yeah. So gain, volume, tone stack, presence, and then you've got like a sensitivity switch as well. Just looks like a really nice amp. I think maybe it's probably got a little less top end than some of their kind of more classic ones, like the Maz 18. And a lot of their other designs tend to go much more down that kind of bright American sort of Fender route. So I think this is going much more for the kind of British sort of Marshall crunch, slightly more mid-heavy nod to the sort of the JTM 45.
Interesting they've gone down that route, because like you say, I kind of associate them with kind of clean and crisp, punchy American style tone. So yeah, interesting that they're kind of wading into that much thicker sort of British sound.
But I've had a few Dr. Z's in my time, and they've added a lot more to their range than they had maybe 6 or 7 years ago. But I think the great thing for me is that they're still so affordable.
Yeah. Do we know what we're looking at for the EMS?
I don't at the moment, but I mean, worth checking out maybe Peach Guitars. They are the only dealer in the UK if you're based in the UK. And the prices to me have always seemed really, really reasonable. I think the only ones that seem slightly unreasonable are the really small ones. They do like an 8-watt amp and it's like £1,000, which I'm like, that is expensive.
Yeah.
But then the kind of 18 and the 36 aren't too much.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Much away from that, so they're definitely, if you've never tried one, they're definitely a brand worth checking out. And if you don't want the sparkly Fender-esque sounds, then I'd say the EMS might be an amp to check out.
And you can customize the Tolex, is that right?
Yeah, they normally do like cream, black and red, but I don't know if they've announced that they're doing those colors on that. I've only seen the black one so far.
Okay, be cool to have a sort of red Marshall-y type amp. I think that'd be awesome.
Because actually, I don't know whether maybe they will offer it in the silver, because they actually do an amp called the Z-Rec, which they offer in a cool like Marshall Silver Jubilee kind of finish.
Nice, Nice. Jay, do you want to tell us about the Matthews Effects Alchemist? Sounds like a cool little box.
Yeah, so the Alchemist will allow you to split your mono signal into stereo, or will allow you to consolidate a stereo signal into mono, which I think seems like a really neat little feature for if, for example, you're the sort of person that's running like Strymon pedals,
yeah,
and you normally run in a full stereo rig, but you show up to a show and, you know, maybe one of your amps has stopped working, or maybe there's only one amp for you to plug in, or, and you don't want to have to rewire your entire board.
Yeah, or you do like, yeah, two styles of gigs. Like
completely.
You do, let's say you do a covers band where you've got the luxury of having two amps.
Yeah.
And you do like a originals band that you can only have one amp on stage.
Exactly. And yeah, you know, it takes up, it's a small profile pedal, just like a Moore size chassis. They're about £80, which I think is pretty reasonable if, you know, that's exactly the sort of thing that you need it to be. You know, if it fills that void.
I think what's cool about it is that if you've got like a mini pedal board that's just got a mono in and out, just a great thing to just split your signal without having to add a clunky, because some people want an ABY but just always leave it in the Y position. So
yeah,
this is great for just splitting, just having dual mono or having a clean sound or two crunchy amps at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. Is there anything you could do with it, like running weird loop setups on your pedal boards? Like, could you have like two loops going and then some into mono?
Maybe. You could run, I suppose what you could do, but then again, if you're running two loops and some into mono, it kind of wouldn't make any sense.
Well, unless you then reconsolidated them at the end of the
pedal board. Because then you might as well run everything. And unless you wanted to run stuff in parallel.
Yeah.
Because effectively, you could do that. You could buy... You could buy two of them. Plug your guitar into one, split it into two, run two separate signal chains, and then sum those back into mono. And then technically you're running them in parallel, not in series.
That, yeah, so basically instead of running, for example, all your fuzzes into your modulation, into your delays,
yeah,
you could run one line of fuzzes and then line of everything else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then reconsolidate the two signals into one without it... Without the fuzzes interfering with the... Because, yeah, I wonder if that'd work. I guess it...
That'd be a really interesting audio experiment.
Yeah.
Because actually, that is a cheap way of, yeah, running, basically running things in parallel, which there isn't really anything on the market that kind of allows you to do that.
Yeah, well, there we go. We've just...
Maybe I should contact them and say, look, can we nerds want to do some...
Can we have
something
two?
Ridiculous.
Yeah, can we please look, listen, two? We're not asking you to send us one. We're asking you to send us two. can we do something? Yeah, that'd be cool. I hadn't really, until I just thought of it, I hadn't really thought about the way that could work. It seems like a bit of a just general utility pedal, which I'm kind of into. You know, there's so many companies out there that do, here's our latest fuzz, or here's our latest delay, or, you know, whatever it is. And there's, of course, there's a place for that. But someone's got to do these utility pedals to make the whole thing actually work. And as far as I understand, Matthews pedals make some great stuff.
Yeah, that sounds really, really cool. So, what's interesting with it is it's got independent input and output buffers.
Okay.
So, yeah, you can...
Switchable?
It doesn't say. I assume so. I assume you can turn them off. If they're independent, then presumably... You'd be able to, maybe there's a dip switch inside that allows you to.
Yeah, that's quite a weird way of wording it, independent. We'll do some more digging.
Yeah.
Do you know roughly how much?
$90, $90. So, okay. Like, not huge money, you know.
Yeah, I mean, thing with the utility pedals is it's a lot for something that essentially doesn't make any sound.
But it's also, if it fits the bill of what you were talking about with regards to, you know, having one pedal board for two different styles of music.
Completely.
If it saves you from spending an hour each week rewiring your pedal board, you know, top banana.
Definitely, definitely.
I would. I was just going to say, I don't think they are switchable purely because if you're going stereo to mono or mono to stereo, you usually need some sort of active signal to effectively split it.
Right,
right.
Of course. I think if you do it passively, it doesn't work. Because I remember talking to James at Bright Onion about this when he did a similar box for me at one point.
Right. Okay, that makes sense, actually. Yeah, that makes sense.
And also, I suppose you want it because then it allows you to drive two lots of cables to amps with a buffer so you don't get any signal loss.
Yeah. Talking about pedals, there's a whole lot this week to rattle through in terms of news. Who wants to tell me about the J-Rocket IQ compressor?
Yeah, I thought this was an awesome... We talk a lot about compressors. I think it's one of those pedals that kind of keeps coming up because we like either leaving them on all the time or we like how much kind of squash it gives us. And we've talked about the Boss one versus the Pulp and Peel. And then you've got real vintage like the Bright Onion baking powder, which a few people have been talking about on the group the last few days. This one from J-Rocket is effectively a compressor with pre-compression EQ that effectively allows you to tailor the frequencies that you want compressed.
Okay.
So the EQ comes slightly before the compressor, and then it just like normal graphic EQ, but those frequencies that you're boosting, I think, are then more heavily affected by the compressor.
That makes sense. So you're putting EQ in the front end and boosting, let's say, the mid-range, and then because that's boosted in the pedal, that's what will get compressed.
Yeah, and then you can mix the dry signal with the compressed signal. So there's a mix control on there as well.
Okay. So, yeah, okay, that makes sense. So you're running just your... Because I was thinking that that's going to sound a bit weird, because obviously if you're compressing one particular frequency, then you're probably going to lose the other bit. So if you boost the mids and then compress them, then it's going to do weird things to the treble and bass. But if you can also blend in the dry signal to counteract
the idea is that the frequency that you want to be compressed harder is based on the respective gain setting. So imagine if you want to really compress the top end for like solos, but then you kind of want to mix in some of the dry signal so you get some of the bass and middle. I think that's great. And they're following this format a bit more. There was the Steve Stevens Archer, which had the EQ in as well. So maybe we'll see a few more pedals like this. But I definitely want to try and get my hands on one of those, because that looks like a cool pedal to kind of mess around with.
Definitely. Jay, do you want to tell me about the Earthquaker Devices Eruptor Fuzz?
No.
Okay. Why do you not want to tell me about it?
Because Matt wants to tell you about it.
Okay, fine. You're breaking the mystery of us actually doing research on these things.
We did talk about it earlier.
On it.
I can't remember. I've got a lot of my head's full of Twin Peaks, sort of like you know, for the quiz.
Weird knowledge.
51,201, that's the population of Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
Crammed that all into the brain hole.
That must have been the first question, surely.
No, it wasn't on there. I looked that up, remembered it. Looked at, like, what are the Hayward sisters called? None of that came up, but we still won, so it's all good. Anyway, Matt, tell me about the Earthquaker Eruptor Fuzz.
Yes, so the newest One Control Fuzz from Earthquaker, following on from their Acapulco Gold, which was based on the model Sun T. This is a fixed output level, fixed gain fuzz pedal.
Okay, what does the knob do in that case?
Bias.
Okay.
So the more you turn it up, the more, because effectively bias is like that voltage sag sort of thing. So the more you increase the bias, the more sort of additional harmonics you're putting on top of the signal, producing like, I suppose, a tighter fuzz with more output and longer sustain. And then as you dial it back, you kind of get that weird sort of spongy, saggy, kind of gated,
that kind
fuzz.
Of sort of broken sound, basically.
Yeah. It looks like such a cool pedal. And the demo video that I saw recently was like, you can even turn it into a synth. I was like, okay, I'll have a listen. And it was someone using that and something else to do the Stranger Things soundtrack.
Nice.
Not exactly the same, but just like kind of that sort of synthy, kind of fuzzy sort of sound on it. And it sounded great. I was like, this is a cool pedal. And I don't think they're a lot of money. They're like $149, I think. I'm sure that's how much the other one was. But I think just great as a kind of, I want to mess around with a fuzz pedal, but sometimes fuzz pedals, the controls can be so interactive and you're just like, you lose a sound really quickly. This one's like, how do I want it? Really sagged, or do I want it like totally like chunky?
Which basically is generally kind of how people would use them anyway, because they'll set the level to balance it out, they'll set the gain so there's kind of like enough, and then most people will use a kind of bias or EQ to actually set the sound that they're getting. So it makes sense to just remove everything else and just put it all on one control. I'm into it.
And I think usually there's some sort of internal trim pot that I think you can use for output gain, usually. I was just trying to have a look to see if I could have a look. But I think everything is kind of almost set on that, unless they've kind of worked out a way to just always have it at unity gain, but and then your volume on your amp kind of then does all the work at that point.
Yeah, interesting. We'll do a bit more deep dive onto that. Jay Cross, do you want to tell me about one last pedal before we actually talk about a guitar this week? The BSM Galaxy 1011.
Yeah.
This sounds like something out of Star Trek.
So, you know how last year last year and the year before were all about, last year was all about sort of amp in a box.
Yeah.
And like replicating like a great, and then all of a sudden the 385 came along. We were like, hang on a sec. This is like an amp in a box, but it's a
projector
in a box. Let me introduce you, please, to a lump of cheddar cheese. Let me introduce you to the first, as far as I'm aware, mic preamp in a box. So this, the BSM Model Galaxy 1011 is based on an old Iowa, I think is how you pronounce it, A-I-W-A, mic preamp that Richie Blackmore used in the mid-70s.
Right.
As a way to, essentially as like a boost and drive unit for his Strat, and he was using it as a, like, in the same way that we would use a drive pedal now. Like, if you turned up the gain, then it made the pickup sound like crunchy and full and warm, but if you turned up the level, then it just gave everything a really nice warm sound, which apparently was something that, you know, guitar player, they really struggled with.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't as many sort of tone shaping options and stuff like that they had. So it sounds really interesting. Really, really weird. It looks fantastic.
I mean, it looks, well, Star Trek.
Yeah, it does look super Star Trek. Really weird. Really weird, like, chassis design as well. So the switch is actually at the top of the unit. It's in the same position as if you turned a normal pedal upside down.
Yeah.
And the controls are either side, and yeah, it's just an all round odd design.
It just looks like someone's gone, right, all the fonts that you can think of,
yeah,
put them on it. It
yeah,
says
there are three, first, four,
it says
five
first,
different typefaces.
It says first special booster.
No, finest.
Oh, finest special booster.
My first special booster.
Hang on, looking at this again, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different typefaces on this pedal.
Yeah.
It's expensive as well.
Go on.
$300.
What? Whoa. So,
you know, essentially, by the sounds of things, it's like a boutique drive pedal, you know. It also apparently comes with and I quote, Marshall Mods kit.
Okay.
So presumably you can open it up and
play around with it and get some
Marshall sounds out of it as well. But
How weird.
Yeah, really, really interesting. I admit, I realise that this is kind of sacrilege. I don't know a huge amount about Richie Blackmore.
No. I know that there's that he did Blackmore's Night, which is the band afterwards, where he does sort of folky stuff and he wears a little pixie hat.
Right.
But I don't know much about him.
Okay.
I know that he plays a Strat.
Yeah.
And I think a Bazooki in Blackmore's Night.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Okay. I think this is likely to be a Blackmore fan memorabilia piece as much as it is anything else.
Yeah.
18 volt as well, so super headroomy.
Always useful.
Completely.
Always useful on the board. Let's wrap up the news segment by actually talking about a guitar. This one popped up into my sort of news feed this week, and I couldn't not talk about it because the shape and the concept behind it is so mad. This is the Pinter Instruments SB1J Jazz Junior.
Yeah, so I did a little bit looking. Pinter is a company that I haven't really come across before.
No.
They are German. They're American. They are American. Apologies. No, the pedal, the pedal's German. That's where
The BSM?
The BSM, yeah. Sorry, that's where I'm getting mixed up. So Pinter are from California, and they make a bunch of different guitars, but they're all the same body shape.
Okay.
Which is a bit weird. So they do...
I'm sort of into that. I like that kind of brand identity. It's the same thing with the Reverend stuff. Like, most of their guitars have the same body shape.
The same shape, yeah. So what's really cool about Pinter is they do... So they've currently got five models in the lineup. One for each genre of music that you could possibly play. So there's one for each genre of music that you would ever play. So, you know, when you're feeling a little bit twangy, you've obviously got the SB1C, the country.
Yep.
When you're feeling super jazzy, you've got the SB1J.
Yep.
When you're feeling, you know, ultra rocking and you want your yellow guitar,
yep.
You've got the SB1R. When you're feeling, you know, especially folky, you've got the SB2, which is a 12 string.
Right.
And then, of course, everyone's favourite genre, SB1S, sport.
Oh, yeah, I like sport music.
Sport is my favourite genre of music.
I like sport videos.
Sport videos, fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, anyway, the thing that I really like about this is everything appears to have been sort of custom made for this guitar. So really weird shape. And if you're not into the shape, then this brand aren't going to be for you, because, as I say, there's no other options. But yeah, it's a alder body, maple neck with Pal Ferro fretboard. So a sort of dark... Rosewood-esque. Yeah, absolutely. 24.75 scale length. But yeah, the pickups have been designed by Righteous Sound pickups, so specifically for this guitar. The case is... Where did I see that? The case is... I've lost it. Protec Contigo. Again, specifically designed for this guitar. And also, the strings are, from what I can tell, maybe designed specifically for this guitar.
This was the thing that caught me, and actually I didn't do as much reading on the brand as you did, but this kind of customizing it specifically for a genre.
Yeah, really interesting. So super jazzy. Now, the strings that come with this guitar are German-made strings by the company Optima. And on this they are 10 to 49, I think it was that I saw. 10 to 49, yeah, 10 to 49. Which is really funny, because when you go on the Optima Strings website, they offer three different gauges of strings. They offer extra light, which is 11s.
Okay.
Light and mediums.
Okay.
And, you know, this is
what
like...
What are the gauges on those?
So 11 to 49, 12 to 54, and, you know, of course, your medium gauge of string, 13 to 56.
Yeah.
So the 10s that are on this guitar aren't even on their website.
Right.
Probably because, you know, they couldn't bear to sully themselves by having such accessible string gauge.
Are they not just following acoustic conventions? Because 13s are a medium on acoustics, aren't they?
Yeah, I guess so. But, you know, it's fun to look at things through our electric guitar bubble.
Indeed, indeed. So what pickups in there? There's a humbucker and a single coil, isn't
there? Yeah, humbucker in the bridge and single coil in the neck. They look really, really cool.
Does it only come in green?
It does not only come in green. You can also get it in black, and you can get it in one other colour that I can't remember. Cream, is it, maybe? Warm grey. So the three colours are...
They're all quite drab, aren't they?
Midnight Noir, Warm Grey, and this green, which is Would Be Green.
Okay, okay.
It would be
you
green.
You can't make grey any warmer. Grey is just grey.
Yeah. What's the price point?
2.5 big ones.
But they're custom made, is that right?
Well, as far as I can tell, yeah. I mean, they're custom designed. They appear to be handmade, I think. Let's go with, yeah, sure.
Okay, good, good.
But, yeah, like a brand that I've not heard of before, and this looks cool. I'm into it.
As weird guitars go, I really like that body shape. My only thing, the thing that really winds me up on any of these custom guitars is they've put their name on the body. Like
they have, yeah, you're right.
Where the neck joint is, there's the logo. Just don't do it.
Yeah.
If you're building custom guitars and you're listening to this, don't put your logo anywhere on the face of the guitar, on the front, on the body. It looks bad. It's always looked bad. Don't do it. Don't do it.
I tell you what, the country model looks really cool.
Yeah, it does look really good.
The country model is obviously the same body shape, two humbuckers, and the three colours that this comes in is baby blue, which isn't what you would... when I think of a baby blue guitar, I think of like a Dan Electro DC-59. Yeah. It also comes in fuchsia and artichoke heart.
Okay, good. Good selection of colours. Weird to go for two humbuckers on a country model.
That's exactly what I was thinking as well.
They must have, be call taps. They must be.
I guess so.
Surely.
And obviously the rock model is what looks like a Floyd Rose.
And isn't the sport one Floyd Rose
the
as well?
The sport, I think, is Floyd as well. Maybe it's not Floyd, actually.
Oh, I like it, though. One humbucker. Beautiful. Yeah. But again, I just can't get around the fact they've put their logo on the body.
The logo on the body is maybe a hard pass for me as well.
Terrible.
Oh, it also comes in everyone's favourite shade of purple, deep purple.
Nice, nice. And then we come back right back around to what we were talking about earlier. Shall we? We've got a little bit of time left to dive into some...
questions.
I just don't have the like vigor about.
I'm not as vigorous as he is anyway, am I?
Questions.
Nah, see that sounds.
I can't even go. As no. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, let's dive in some questions. Let's pick out one that is. Let's do. Okay. Okay. So Vi says, does anyone here have an experience slash some thoughts about the Tokai Love Rock Les Pauls or Tokai guitars in general? I recently got myself a Love Rock Les Paul and I'm pretty satisfied with it. It's an awesome instrument for the money. Matt Knight, what's your experience with Tokai stuff?
I don't know much about their history and where they're made now, but I know that they've varied in factories for the last sort of 20 years or so. And about 8 years ago, I nearly bought a friend of mine's Tokai Love Rock Les Paul. It was like a natural quilt one, and it was amazing. And I think he paid about $1,100 or $1,200 for it at the time. So it was definitely one of the higher end ones, and it was just a great guitar. And yeah. I think my general experience is alongside that one, I've played a couple other older ones, like more of the Les Paul style ones, and they've all been really nice.
Yeah,
but I've never really known much of their like background. I think it's the thing. I've never kind of really looked at specs or where they come from or how they came to be. I've played one of the Strat ones and I wasn't as impressed as the Les Paul type ones. But I think if you can find an old one, I think they're generally all considered to be pretty good, like Japanese built ones, definitely.
So it's my understanding, and I'm sure Mark will correct me if I'm wrong here, but it's my understanding that Tokai was originally put together as a way for Ibanez to not get sued and lose everything by copying
I'm not sure that's
Gibson
true.
Guitars.
I'm not sure that's true.
I'm sure that was the origins of the company.
I think they are separate from that. But we should maybe actually spin this out into a bigger podcast. But, I mean, what I will say is in terms of, like, quality stuff and my experience with them is that... So, long ago, GAC, when I first started working there, took on Tokai as a brand, and we'd already played, or myself and some of the other staff there kind of knew the history of the brand and obviously really liked the Japanese stuff and the vintage stuff. You'd occasionally get used to see more of the kind of 70 stuff and 80 stuff kicking about, and the Les Pauls were fantastic, Japanese built, you know, perfect guitars, basically perfectly built, and we had in from time to time the second hand even the Fender copies, so the springy sound and the breezy sound, I think, are the two. I think it's Strat is the springy sound and Tele is the breezy sound.
All right.
I think, but also the basses, the hard puncher is the P bass. And they were always awesome. In fact, I almost bought a hard puncher back in the day as a like a P bass, just a second bass to have, because it was $400 or $500, Japanese built, really nice early 80s probably P bass. So then we took on the brand and we got some of the Korean and Chinese stuff in and were severely underwhelmed.
Yeah.
really, really disappointed by the build. At the time, this was probably early 2000s, so it would have been like 2002, 2003 probably. At the time, they were similar price to like Epiphone, maybe a bit more expensive, and they weren't as good at the time, which I think was kind of very disheartening for all of us, because we expected it to come in and be like...
You have that sort of nostalgia trip on them,
well, completely. And to be honest, I never got to try a modern Japanese one, so I can't actually speak to the quality of the modern ones.
Well,
I was going to say, Matt, I've also heard that the quality of the Korean and the other Far Eastern ones that they're making, I don't know if they're Indonesian or Chinese, I've heard the quality on those is now, like, fantastic. So, yeah, my experience is from back in the day was the Korean stuff and the, I think it was Chinese at the time, stuff wasn't fantastic, but I've heard now that it is very, very good for the money.
Yeah, I was just actually doing a little bit of research. Here's a strange fact. The Tokai factory, surprisingly, I didn't know this, is actually in, or the headquarters is in Hamamatsu, which is also where the Boston Roland headquarters is, which is also where the Yamaha HQ is, and also Kawai, who are the other like Japanese piano manufacturer.
Yep.
But they also, their factory, the Tokai factory, produced Fender Japan solid body models from 1997 until 2015. So anything with Crafted in Japan on was built in either that factory or the Dainagaki factory.
Well, all right,
there we go. Tokai making some stuff.
They've actually been making replicas since 77.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and
that's pretty mental. But Love Rock came in 1980.
Yeah, yeah. I always hear really good things about them. And like I said, the vintage stuff that I've played, very good. The original, I think, cheaper range wasn't fantastic. But from what I hear now, they're much, much improved. And kind of,
I think they're just difficult to get now. It's just, I mean, I just went on the Tokai website and it just says it is under construction.
Right. Is there a little under construction gif of a little man digging with a pickaxe or something?
Yeah, classic. I think the website's probably not been updated since 1999.
Excellent. With that, we should call this an evening. If you want to hear more guitar nerds, we're going to go and record a Patreon episode. This week, actually, the Patreon episode is from something that got sent into the Facebook group by Stuart, who said, after a chat with some fellow nerds yesterday, I'm now looking into MIDI pedals. The Boss DD500 has taken my eye. What exactly can I do with MIDI? I'm a complete noob. I have a switcher that is MIDI compatible. So what I thought we'd talk about in the Patreon episode this week is MIDI, history of MIDI, what MIDI pedals are out there now, what MIDI switches are out there now, what you can do with MIDI, what you can't do with MIDI, and generally how it all works. Matt, I'm sure there's going to be plenty for you to talk about.
I was going to say, it's a good job that this is no longer a video podcast, because Matt Knight just I think his head just exploded with how excited he is about talking about MIDI.
Everyone loves MIDI.
Got MIDI.
We've still got to do that t-shirt. We've still got to do the Got MIDI t-shirt.
Got MIDI. If you want to hear that, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month you can support this podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular podcast early and without any ads. $5 a month gets you extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds podcast content every week, plus access to the interviews that we do with the interviews that Matt does with various pedal builders, and I interview people doing weird guitar or niche guitar stuff on the internet. Jay, you're probably going to be doing some band stuff at some point, interviewing bands about their gear. Plus, you also get access to Joe Branton's mini-series, the Branton Ranton, and some other mini-series stuff that we've got in the pipeline as well. Plus, if you sign up, you can always access all the previous content. So there's like 80 hours or something worth of stuff on there. There's plenty to keep you going.
Too much, if anything.
Too much. We're giving you too much stuff, basically.
We're giving it away.
We are indeed. Wow. And there's also a final tier, the $10 tier, which at the moment is fully subscribed to, but do keep an eye because spaces do crop up from time to time. If you do that, you get all the other stuff that we just mentioned, plus you get your name read out like this.
Derek Bridge, Chris Connors, Andy Joy, Steve McCall, it's Blair Toms, Carlos Mancha, Andrew Marco, Mark Cross, JD Shaw, Annie McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Jack Godfrey, and Will Clare. Scott O'Brien and Matt Quine, Phil Thompson, Laurie Ann Stiss, Moog Gravitt, and we have... We all live in a Colin Anderson world, a Colin Anderson world, a Colin Anderson world. We all live in a Colin Anderson world, a Colin Anderson world, a Colin Anderson world.
That was the best one we've ever done, and Joe Brandon's not here to experience it. I do just want to say thanks to people who sent in music with Joe Branton exclaiming that he's never going to buy a guitar ever again.
My word. The only one I've heard is the one that Moog sent through, yeah. And it was utterly, utterly incredible.
We also got another couple. What I'm going to do is, I'm not going to put them in this episode because obviously Joe's not here. Next week, I think I'm going to put one as the opening theme and one as the closing theme. And if you do want to send them in, if you don't know what we're talking about, go and listen to last week's episode. Joe made a claim that he was never going to buy any more basses again, which is, we all know...
Moog's one was so good.
We all know that is utter bullshine. And Joe will be buying other basses. So I wanted people to capture that, put it into a catchy little song, and blimey, I was overwhelmed by the quality of the stuff that we got. So you'll be hearing all those next week. I didn't want to do it this week because Joe's not here. So the other things you can do, join the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum, where you can chat about the show and submit questions and all that good stuff. And you can also follow us on Twitter @guitar nerds and Instagram @guitar nerds. You can follow us on Twitch, twitch.tv/guitar nerds. You can go to YouTube, youtube.com/guitar nerds videos. Whew. Thanks very much. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, gang.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.